Roughly 1 year ago, a man was arrested in Russia for disseminating extremist materials. Today, we are going to talk about those materials and speak with a notable figure from the group that published them. The structure of this video will include an introduction, an overview of autonomous action, and then an interview with Antti Rantanainen. Autonomous Action is an interregional anarcho-communist association whose goal is to implement libertarian communism based on principles such as direct democracy, public self-government, and federalism. The Anarchist Federation in Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine was founded in January 2002. I reference a website also entitled Autonomous Action in Translation, which is a media group that formed out of the Autonomous Action movement. Basic principles include, but are not limited to, anti-authoritarianism, anti-fascism, anti-nationalism, anti-Bolshevism, self-governance, environmentalism, and anti-sexism. Autonomous Action rejects Putinism and misguided Westerners who harbor pro-Putin sentiments out of frustration with their own ruling elite as a viable balance or some type of alternative. Many of the articles discuss anarchists and anti-war protesters who are in jail or on trial in Russia for their activities, with fundraisers for some and information of how to write to others. The front page contains many different kinds of articles, and there is an English version. Many of the articles on the front page have to do with trial, pre-trial, or imprisoned anarchists and anti-war protesters in Russia. There's a section on the website that I would encourage you all to visit entitled Anti-War Agitation, showing their point of view on what's happening in Ukraine regarding Russia's invasion. Their website also has a lot of great artwork, stickers, and pamphlets. I think it's very useful to look at the pamphlets because in these pamphlets, you see a style, an aesthetic, and a message that many Westerners don't get to see regarding what's happening in Ukraine or Belarus, for that matter. Some of these are just anti-war type things, questioning the invasion of Ukraine. This, for example, if you're watching the video, it talks about the mass mobilization efforts in Russia. This pamphlet, which I found particularly striking, asks, liberating from Nazism with a question mark, and it shows a soldier carrying an infant over a bridge. On the bottom, translated, it loosely says, where a bridge once stood. And just going down, there's also, as noted earlier, just some great artwork stickers. I think it's useful because there are some things that you can make connections to from the West. But there's also a very unique message that, again, I think is missing, at least from the broader mainstream media or alternative media networks that you would see on Twitter and other, social media in the West. This is a pamphlet that Auntie sent me. And you'll hear Auntie talking about anarchist Black Cross of Moscow throughout the video, but near the end he talks about this pamphlet specifically, and it talks about what this organization is, the view of the war in Ukraine, and also some people involved too. So I'm gonna read through this. Now, this was not in English originally, so I had to translate it, and it wasn't a document, so it was an image. I know of some websites that do this. I use this when translating all of the hacked Russian documents that were pictures, PDFs, PowerPoints from previous videos. So I believe that this translation is at least fairly decent. I'm going to read through it for the folks who are listening. Moscow Group of the Anarchist Black Cross. Moscow Group of the Anarchist Black Cross was founded in 2003. We are an independent group supporting repressed anarchists. We support all repressed anti-authoritarians, their supporters, and those who are persecuted due to their political activities or acts which do not contradict the ideas of anarchism. Whenever possible, we support prisoners who become anti-authoritarians during their sentences, or the so-called societal prisoners who were forced to break laws for their livelihood or in the fight against the despotism of the ruling class, as well as prisoners who fight against the prison industrial complex from inside. In some cases, we may support a prisoner for purely humanitarian reasons. The war with Ukraine, which the authorities have demanded to be called a special military operation, has irreversibly changed Russian society. Since the 24th of February, anti-war protests have been happening every day. People are also persecuted for public anti-war statements in social networks, which become grounds for criminal prosecution. Public anti-war statements are grounds for criminal prosecution, and at the moment, the human rights organization OBD Info is reporting on 558 suspects or convicts. There have been more than 200 attacks against military enlisting offices and other objects of authorities since the beginning of the war. People who have been incarcerated need constant and focused support. It is important to write them letters, disseminate information about their case, and organize fundraisers. Although lawyers in Russia do not have as much influence on the criminal process and subsequent sentencing, they do reduce the likelihood of torture and also help establish contact with the political prisoner, which facilitates communication and promotes more productive activities to provide the necessary assistance. The work of attorneys, food and supplies collected for prisoners, and legal fees of all kinds require large financial resources that are often in short supply. We call on you to show your solidarity and support anti-authoritarian prisoners in Russia. No one should be left alone with this repressive system. Let us stand together against state arbitrariness. And we have codes for their website, Facebook, email, PayPal. I'll put these links in the description. I would encourage everybody to check out the Autonomous Action website. There's so much there. It could be a video in and of itself talking about the artwork, talking about the many different topics that are included in the articles. There's just a lot of great information there. Again, the link will be in the description to this video or audio that you're listening to. There is a Wikipedia page too. So if you want to, you can check that out. And at the bottom, there are some citations and links that might be helpful. In the notable members section, Antti is cited. So the next portion of this video is going to be my discussion with Antti, which happened a few days ago at this point. We're going to talk about everything ranging from autonomous action to anti-fascism, anarchism, the war in Ukraine, Russian politics, campism, global politics, many different topics. So you're really going to enjoy it. I'll say this now because the rest of this will be the interview. In the description of the audio or video, there's going to be some links for Antti's work as well, including social media. He makes videos, he makes podcasts. He's a brilliant person. I would encourage and hope that you all go out, listen, see what he has to say, and support him as best you can. I'm currently working on a video discussing dissent within and against the Russian government. It's based off of a data set of hacked government documents from GRFC and Roskomnadzor that discusses the institutional censorship of anti-war and opposition entities in the country. In reading about opposition entities, I was introduced to anti-fascist and anarchist groups. I just completed a video with Tom, who is from the Rhizome House, which is an info shop in Cleveland, Ohio, USA, where Cooper Harris Andrews volunteered at prior to leaving to fight in Ukraine. It was within those discussions that I was introduced to some other groups that we're going to talk about today and ideas as well. So we're going to talk about, you know, your story as well as anti-fascist groups, anarchist groups, mutual aid, and whatever else we have time for. Why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners, your name, and maybe a brief overview, and we can talk about, you know, maybe how we started in Russia and go from there.
So my name is Antti Rautiainen. I was involved in Autonomous Action, which was the Russian-wide libertarian communist organization from the founding to the 2012 when I was deported from Russia. I'm still organized different support initiatives for Russian anarchist and autonomous and libertarian communist initiatives, and also especially mostly prisoner supports, but also other initiatives. And lately it comes pretty much to kind of anti-war kind of work. We also organize annual gathering in Helsinki, which is called Father Frost against Putin. Doesn't necessarily so understandable in English, but Father Frost is basically the Soviet and Russian equivalent of Santa Claus. So it's always with who comes in the New Year's Eve. So this, we organize it usually in the turn of the year. It's been going on for, actually it will be 10th years anniversary on the next year. Hopefully we manage to organize it again. So this is a bit of background, what I'm up to. But yeah, for the last 11 years, I've been residing in Helsinki, Finland.
Okay.
But it's still, Russia is still very close. It's 200 kilometers. It's less than 200 miles to the border from here. But now, of course, this distance is very big because you cannot. I haven't been able to cross the border for last 10 years, and nowadays pretty much no one else is also able to cross, at least to this direction. To other direction, you still maybe can go.
Around that, you know, when you said that you were deported around that time, I was thinking that was an interesting time, you know, for Russia. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was roughly around the time where Putin transitioned back from prime minister to president again. And
yeah,
I think,
this was of course this was of course connected. Like, it was connected to this protest movement. Our group, the autonomous section, we were actually one of the first groups who organized protest. We organized illegal demonstration already in the election night, and the next day it became kind of spontaneous scuffles in Moscow, and this movement grew very strong all around Russia protesting. This was in the Duma elections, actually the previous December. And then when the Putin's election were building up, the protest movement was building, and eventually there was also a big clash in the Bolotnaya Square in Moscow, which resulted in huge repression in the May of 2012. But this was already 1 month after I got deported. But it was also, my deportation was also a connection to raising on significance of the anarchist and anti-fascist movement and different kind of underground anti-fascist and anarchist activities, which basically, it was not that I was kind of considered to be important or dangerous person. It was more like a general sweep of active anarchists. So why they basically decided that, okay, it's time to kick this guy out. It could have happened 5 years before, or even 10 years before, but they didn't really pay the attention. But then when they started to pay attention, it was basically a low-hanging fruit to deport someone who basically just has a residence permit.
Yeah, you know, and so it kind of makes sense to begin with a, you know, group of self-described anarchists or something. But, you know, I do think, and it's it might have been after you left, but, you know, you said sweep, and it makes me think of a lot of laws that were passed in that time too, you know, the Foreign Agents Act, the LGBTQ laws, different laws about, you know, repression of protests too. It seems like maybe
this started off, I mean, it has been continuous. Like, basically, it's not that there was a turn. This was like continuous, like, it's basically this kind of frog boiling in the water situation. And actually, when during the Second Chechen War, the first year I was in Moscow, right, we decided to organize demonstration every week. This was year 2000 when the Putin came to power, because everyone was sure that, okay, this is the KGB guy, this won't last long. Like, if we don't go to street now, we will probably won't be able to go to street like in a few months or 1 year from now. But actually all of this took 20 years. So it was very surprisingly slow, slight authoritarianism. And at some point, sometimes like maybe 2007, 2008, I have doubts that, okay, maybe this guy is not a Czechist. Maybe it's not a KGB guy. Maybe he is a proper authoritarian Democrat guy who is basically like rigging the elections, but it's only rigging 15%.
Right.
But of course, it doesn't go like this. Like, I'm pretty sure that, of course, we don't see what's happening in this guy's head. I'm quite sure he also changed his worldview. Like 15 years ago, he was
so
less
too.
authoritarian. But basically, in the when you scratch the surface, eventually the KGB guy is there, and this is basically what we expected already happened already more than 20 years ago. It's happening now, and now it's a completely. I would say, of course, it's a very peculiar kind of fascism. It's very different. Different system from the 30s European fascism. It's much more apathetic and nihilist without much engagement. It's more like a kind of apathetic fascism. It's not like enthusiastic cultish kind of thing, but still I would it's more close to this kind of far-right authoritarian dictatorship and might be sliding to complete totalitarianism.
And so how does some of these groups, and I'll let you elaborate on them, because I've run into many in my research, and I've had communication with many too, Solidarity Collectives, Radical Aid Force, Resistance Committee, but Autonomous Action, you know, being one of them. How do these groups, or Autonomous Action, if we want to speak to that, how do they fit into all of this and fighting back against this, whether it's political prisoners or something else?
Yeah. So yeah, we can go back to these different positions, or maybe we should actually start a bit about this different, like still about the positions, because
yeah,
obviously in Russia also, like everywhere, anarchists are not agreeing about everything. Even in Ukraine, there are a bit different positions. But yeah, if there is basically four different positions on the left in this war, I would say like at least two or three of them are around. Like there is not really in Russian, I don't think there are like pro-Putin anarchists. There are some, there might be some in the anti-fascist movement, because anti-fascist in Russia, especially when it was most relevant 15 and 10 years ago, it was a coalition of very different people, including people who were like authoritarian leftists or quite conservative, like, for example, sharp skinheads are sometimes in the United States. And some of these people now who were in the Antifa movement 15 years ago, they are now have a pro-invasion position. But this is not the case with anarchists. I would say that all the anarchists are anti-Putin and anti-war, but basically the lines of arguing is different. There is like pro-Ukraine position that basically we should support Ukrainian resistance, and this is quite common. Then there is pacifist line. It's probably not very popular anywhere, but there are around some pacifists who are basically against all the kind of violence, and it's kind of consistent position.
Right.
And then there is also this so-called position, which I would call anti-militarists, even if, of course, all the anarchists are anti-militarist, but it's also kind of self-definition, which is it's more like voiced in places now in South Europe, like in Italy, for example, I see in the anarchist movement, but also to some extent in Russia. There are people who basically think that, okay, it would be not good to fight against imperialism with weapons, but it should be somehow independent guerrillas or something, not connected to any kind of Ukrainian military structures.
Right.
But autonomous action doesn't, so it's not possible really to openly say that, okay, let's, it's still, it has a history to be like open, like not like open, but also not a clandestine organization. Like it has open events. You can go in, and basically authorities maybe have ideas or maybe not who is involved. Many of the people have escaped from Russia. Some might still be involved. So it's not really saying openly that, okay, let's burn the military transport, for example, because this can be tricky. But when other groups are discussing this stuff, we can republish it. We can republish stuff, statements by the Ukrainian anarchists. We can publish, by our good friend and comrade Dmitry Petrov, who was never a member of Autonomous Action, but always a good comrade, who was dying in the front. One of the people who was setting up the resistance committee when the war started, and also one of the founders of the anarcho-communist fighting organization, who is involved in the insurgent activism inside Russia. So, and the autonomous action in general, yeah, it's mostly just spreading general anti-war agitation and trying to join the social movements that are happening inside Russia basically creating some change. But there is also like there is a separate prisoner support groups. For Anarchist Black Cross of Moscow, it's a very old group and a small group. Now there is a new, very active group, Solidarity Zone. It's established by basically anti-authoritarians. They are supporting especially direct action prisoners because often human rights organization are not supporting them. And they have networks inside Russia, but also in the migration. And there is Anti-Job project. It's also quite old project. It's kind of online working place organization group. And they have been especially supporting, for example, teachers who are refusing to spread anti-war, or like to pro-war propaganda. So because basically even in the kindergartens, there is a brainwashing operation going on. And many teachers are refusing to join this, and then they end up to some problems. But I would say many projects which are not explicitly anarchist, they are still kind of in the anti-authoritarian directions. For example, the feminist anti-war resistance, it's organized in the very, it's one of the biggest, especially during the first months, it's one of the biggest anti-war networks. They had more than 70 cities around Russia. And there is still lots of people staying in Russia who are spreading their materials. And it's mostly not anarchist, but their way of organizing is completely anarchist. They don't have a central leadership and so on. And also like news project like Mediazona, which was which was established by the Pussy Riot around 10 years ago. It has many anarchist working there, and also OVD Info, which was established by Memorial organization. It still also has lots of anti-authoritarian comrades, and also Doxa project, which was originally a student newspaper. It has a very strong anti-authoritarian spirit. So there are lots of also this kind of especially media infrastructure, which is not explicitly anarchist, but who is close to the anarchist movement, or at least kind of anti-authoritarian. So this is as far is what is happening in Russia. In Ukraine, it seems to me that most of the anarchist organizing has been put on hold because of the war, and anarchists are concentrating to initiatives like the Solidarity Collectives. And I think there are also at least one other such a project, which is basically connected historically to the Revolutionary Confederation of Anarcho-Syndicalists, which was more or less crushed with the 2014 invasion. But people moved to western part of Ukraine, and they are still involved in this kind of stuff. And also there is a Black Flag group in Lviv, which is also basically involved in various frontline activities. So I think most of the Ukrainian anarchist movement is basically busy solely with the war. In Russia, it's not the case. Completely anarchists also try to involve in other kind of social project and some general discussions and so on, also about Rojava and other things. And there is actually interesting development, which I only learned today, that there is actually new kind of legal anarchist network in Russia, which is called Federation of Evolutionary Anarchists. So they are kind of non-revolutionary anarchists, which try to involve in only legal things. But this is a bit strange. They don't have any kind of anti-war position or message in their social media. They have maps which show Donetsk as part of Russia. So it might be this is actually even a FSB setup, like a secret service setup.
Yeah.
And because there used to be this kind of things happening a lot in 20s and 30s, and to some extent also in Perestroika time and early 90s, that authorities tried to control movements by creating a fake movements. And maybe actually also in 20 years ago, they were a bit this kind of fishy initiatives going around. But this I only learned today. I didn't do much research yet. But yeah, there are this kind of things happening and might be going to different directions.
So I want to take a step back because you said a lot. And
yeah.
I think for folks here in the US that aren't engaged in this, there's opportunity to kind of elaborate on some of that. The first thing, and I think some of it might be very basic, but the first thing is that you talked about some of these groups. You talked about solidarity collectives, for instance. What are the solidarity collectives? What is that organization?
Yeah, solidarity collectives is basically initiative of Ukrainian anarchist and anti-authoritarians, and they have two. It's working in Kyiv and also in other cities, and they have basically two directions. They have a humanitarian directions. They are visiting different frontline villages and cities, providing with different humanitarian aids they managed to raise. But they're also supporting anarchist and anti-authoritarian fighters in the frontline, because it actually is kind of understood, maybe abroad, maybe in the United States, there is this huge, big centralistic Ukrainian, NATO, whatever military machine fighting against Russia. But it's actually not really military machine, because often only thing that is provided in the front is maybe some heavy weapons and Kalashnikov rifle. And maybe some bullets and whatever else has to be provided by the people themselves. So, like starting from this kind of anti bulletproof vests and night vision gears and drones. Most of this stuff is actually organized by grassroots initiatives. So it's kind of Ukrainian army. It's kind of a grassroots army. Of course, there is kind of central command, but the fact that basically the war is pretty much supplied by the volunteers, it's of course is influencing stuff. Influencing stuff, you cannot really say that it's a completely centralized thing. It's a mixture with some militia and the state army. Like much of the things in Ukraine, it's not really like a functional government. It's the whole Ukraine is obviously the weakest state in Europe. And if you go there, you don't maybe it's so much even recognize that the state is existing. Like I wouldn't say that it's kind of some sort of anarcho-communist utopia. It's more like anarcho-capitalist chaos. I mean, if you compare it to the Nordic well-ordered welfare state stuff, it's a chaotic place. But it managed to stop the invasion, like they have this thing and so on. But you need every day this kind of work, like the groups like Solidarity Collectives is necessary. And you want to be sure that you're supporting your aid is going into the anarchists, then this, of course, makes sense, or anti-authoritarians or kind of trade union activists also, they are supporting trade union militants then who are in the front, then it's a good place to donate.
What about so you said another group too, and I think this is important for or informational for people to understand. I don't know many people listening to this would know. You mentioned a resistance committee. So how could you explain what the resistance
committee resistance is? Committee basically evolved to be solidarity collectives. So That's basically pretty much the thing. Resistance committee had this idea of creating anti-authoritarian units, and this was something that anarchist, but it failed. They kind of ended up to having conflicts with military structures, So in the end, whoever wanted to the front, they had to go to separate units, which
Right.
might be also good, because if all the anarchists were in the one unit after one cruise missile strike, it might be there were no more anarchists in Ukraine. So might be this kind of decentralization might be good, but also it needs means that they maybe have a bit less influence or how what is happening and so on. But anyway, it's up to them. There might be probably some anarchists are still trying to create anti-authoritarian unit. Maybe they will somehow manage to put it together at some point. But yeah, solidarity collectives is now the main reference point. There is no any anti-authoritarian unit. There are different people there, here and there. Some are in the International Legion and some are in the other units.
Right, and that's my understanding.
Also, I think there are quite a lot of Belarusian anarchists who are in these Belarusian units.
Right. Yeah, that many folks who had the idea to create something like what you were saying, essentially had to filter through those international units and able, you know, in order to actually get to the front lines and participate. Yeah. And it's interesting too, I think, for folks in the US, I think that the political prism might be a little bit different. And I say that because when we say things like anti-fascist versus anarchist versus anti-authoritarian versus authoritarian left, those subdivisions do exist, but you know, not to a broader audience, I suppose. You know, it, you know, are there not dictionary definitions, but differences? You know, like for instance, in Solidarity Collective, they'll say anarchists, you know, anti-authoritarian group or something like that. Are there differences between someone that might say I'm an anti-fascist or I'm anti-authoritarian or I'm an anarchist, at least in this region of the world?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like anti-authoritarian, it's a bit like a fishy tamer, because it's basically anti-authoritarian is someone who anarchists think that it's basically should be anarchist, but doesn't define themselves as anarchist. So it's basically just a label that anarchists are throwing around.
Yeah,
it's not so common that someone who is not anarchist is even using this terminology, but sometimes it's like sometimes I come around with people who are defining themselves as anti-authoritarian, it's quite uncommon. But like what I mean is, it's kind of broad network of anarchists and their friends, if something is anti-authoritarian. I was earlier talking about autonomous action. It was a bit special case because there was a self-definition of libertarian communists. Because when it was established, there was this idea that maybe we can invite some Marxists also. But
mm-hmm.
This anti-authoritarian Marxism in other places, outside places like Italy and Germany or France, it was always a very small thing. Of course, in Italy, it's huge, but it never really, in Eastern Europe, it never like really became influential or important tendency. So, but anyway, like, so it's basically like anti-authoritarian in this respect. It can also mean that lots of a pack of anarchists and one or two smart Marxist anti-authoritarian people. But what comes to anti-fascism? Anti-fascism is of course much more wider umbrella. And I think this maybe also has evolved in the States a bit, because nowadays, basically, I guess in the state, anti-fascist is also always leftist. But historically,
yep.
I read that actually, for example, in the 60s, they are also in the 60s counterculture stuff. I read that there were also even some libertarians involved. And in the 80s, when the anti-racist action was set up, there was lots of sharp skinheads, and the sharp skinheads, they are not necessarily very leftist.
Yeah.
Leftist,
yeah,
like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if any of them were like Republicans, but they were definitely not like socialist or anything. So this was kind of situation also in the Russia, like 15 years ago. And even still, also liberal in Russia, it's not necessarily leftist. Like in Russia, there is a huge split between between kind of right-wing liberals and the conservatives, because conservatives in Russia, they are like real conservatives. It's not like neocons. Like neocons is a synthesis of conservative value and liberal economics. But these people wouldn't care less about liberal economics. Like Putin basically is doing liberal economics, but he doesn't like to think about the economy. He is just giving economy to economists and tries not to even, he's not interested about the economics. And Russian fascists, they are really fascist. They are not like fascists who want free market. So this is a big difference in the, between the Russian Europe and the state. And the liberals, like right-wing liberals and conservatives, you didn't see much in the same thing. And so then we have anti-fascists who basically think that Pinochet was a nice guy.
Yeah,
because they don't like Nazis, and also very conservative people. And there is even there used to be even people in Antifa who say that maybe like Mussolini was not so bad, but I hate these Russian Nazis and I'm beating them up. So this was how it was 15 years ago. And of course, we were arguing with these people, but everyone was attacking Nazis together because Nazis were still like 50 times more or 10 times more at least. Yeah. So it was kind of this kind of broad umbrella. But of course, in the current situation, there is nothing left of this umbrella because there are some anti-fascists who go to fight in Donbass, like volunteering. But it's the same with the fascists. Like fascists are also completely split on this.
Right.
But anarchists are not. Like anarchists, at least until appearance of this evolutionary anarchist federation, all the anarchists had anti-war position. Not everyone was supporting Ukrainian army, but at least no one was supporting Russian army.
Yeah, that's, I don't want to go off, but you know, I think what you said about Sharps is pretty interesting. Maybe that's something I'll talk about in a different episode with anti-fascism. But I am with Autonomous Action, I'm you know, I am looking, or I've looked at their website, and they do even have a like a statement about, you know, anti-war agitation and Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And at least with the Autonomous Action, it does seem to be a pretty, you know, coherent stance against the invasion of Ukraine, and, you know, suggesting even that, you know, soldiers should just put down their weapons, for instance. And you know, since after mass mobilization, there's been all types of things happening in Russia, you know, actions against recruitment centers and things like that. But is that your understanding from Autonomous Action, that it's solidly against this, and, you know, working with political prisoners or dissidents or people who in one way or another are trying to escape?
Yeah, obviously. Like, and I would say that, like, political support of political prisoners and anti-war prisoners and direct action prisoners, it's obviously something that also some pacifist and anti-militarist would agree. I wouldn't say that this kind of practical stuff in Russia, it's not, there is not a reason to disagreement. It's another thing that this people who have this anti-militarist kind of position of not supporting Ukraine, they maybe don't do much stuff in practice.
Right.
It's more like a kind of wants to, don't want to put their hands dirty. They're just not doing much. But it's another thing. I also, already 10 years I don't live there. I don't know everything what everyone is doing. But to me, it seems that people who are mostly actually doing stuff, they are mostly kind of understanding Ukrainian resistance and why it's important to fight against this imperialism. And then people who basically are against war, but not so much for Ukraine, they also don't do so much and maybe just going to live their lives and try to kind of not to be in radar of the authorities. But it might be, it's just my impression.
Yeah.
Impression. And I would say that Especially if you think who were anarchists 10 or 15 years ago. It was a common space, Belarus, Kyiv, Moscow. Everyone was going to each other's cities for the weekends. People knew each other. People were fighting the same fascists in the football matches. Everyone knew each other. And this in this situation, of course, if we see our comrades in Ukraine trying to defend themselves just to stay alive, because obviously if Russia managed to take over to Ukraine, everyone would be massacred or forced to escape. There wouldn't be any of these people left. So, of course, we have solidarity with them. Might be then there is, at some point, there are newer people coming who don't have this history of common political activist space that don't share this solidarity.
Yeah.
But also, in the other hand, of course, there is this thing in the anti-fascists that many of these former anti-fascists, they don't have a problem of betraying this solidarity that was 15 years ago. So it's another thing. Some people don't have this kind of, how to say, problems. They can just... I was, a couple of days ago, I was checking one band, like this kind of... credit section, like there was a hardcore band 15 years ago, anti-fascist band who was from Nizhny Novgorod, which was called Vojna Polozhenie, State of War, and they were thanking different people in the sleeve of the record, and they were now these people are basically in opposite camps. There yeah. were lots of Ukrainians, lots of Belarusians, but also lots of Russians who are now organizing a pro-war punk concerts. So this also can happen.
That's interesting.
But not really in anarchist movement. This is more kind of civil war in the Antifa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is different than in the States for sure. But yeah. You know, it's also interesting that you're finding support for the invasion even within that kind of culture. I mean, in the United States, you know, I grew up going to hardcore shows and punk shows as well. And it's different, but, you know, similar in many ways. I knew Sharps, for instance, and so that was interesting when you were talking about skinheads against racial prejudice. It's interesting to think that today that there might be groups in Russia that are, you know, pro invasion, I suppose. But, you know, these factions exist in the West too, not in that way. But there are factions in the West, and I think that sometimes they get too simplified, to where people say, you know, you're just a pro-Russian, you know, puppet or something, or you're just eating Russian propaganda. I think some things that you said, you know, about like the anti-war movement, for instance, applies here. Now there are people who are opportunistic, who make money, you know, and in media that are saying, you know, we need to stop, or for political reasons domestically. They say that, but I think that there are people who legitimately have, you know, been pacifist their whole lives and see this as just another war, without any kind of equivocating or differences. And I do think that there are probably some people too who see the United States after 20 years of war and NATO, you know, really since the collapse of the Soviet Union and the imperialism of the West, and see this as another example. Not necessarily because they got brainwashed or because they fell into propaganda, but because that's how they were socialized to view the world. This is how they view things, you know? And I kind of think that leads to like another discussion of, you know, given those realities and some of the divisions that you talked about in at least Eastern Europe, if not Ukraine, Russia, Belarus, whether it's from you or maybe, you know, autonomous action or some of these larger groups, you know, what would you say to people in New York or San Francisco that you know, look at, you know, like, hey, this is just the United States using Ukraine as a pawn. And these people are going there and they're dying. And it's just, you know, it's about the U.S. and expanding influence and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are nuanced positions. Like, of course, it might be often a problem in the United States that schools don't teach so much about other countries.
Yeah.
And there is like very stupid positions. For example, this kind of campist idea, like American exceptionalist. There is a certain idea that all the evil in the world is from the CIA and the United States, and everyone else is just somehow the puppets. And if there is somewhere in Africa or Asia or Latin America or whatever, if there is a coup or some political violence, somehow it's a CIA involvement is behind it. It's also around in some places in the Europe, like for example in the Greece, because they have this history of American involvement, they tend to believe that it's also like things like the Chechen War is also somehow CIA plot. And stuff like this, but this is, I mean, it's this is more like a conspiracy thing, and I think you shouldn't expect that. And it's also kind of it's also kind of how to say imperialistic mindset, but it's just another type of the coin. It still assumes that America is the only agent in the world. It's a bit like in Germany, there are anti-Germans who believe that the German imperialism is a specific thing. It's just much worse than any other imperialism. Right. It's kind of mindset which sometimes happens with the people who have this... who have kind of in some big imperialistic state. And actually, to some extent, it's even existing in Russia, especially in the early 90s or late 90s, there was kind of this kind of anti-Russian liberals who are basically, it's kind of also at the opposite side of the coin. They were I know a guy, for example, who basically loves America. He lives in Yekaterinburg. He was always anti-militarist activist, but he loves United States. He thinks it's a paradise. His parents, he's a Jewish, his parents immigrated to the United States already in the 80s. But the problem is that he never can travel the United States because sometime 30 years ago, he signed a petition for Mumia Abu Jamal. So he's basically applies for visa, he's refused. And but he still loves America. I was in Himki protest camp a bit more than 10 years ago, and they were like everyone was there, and I was hanging, they were like Russian liberals and national Bolsheviks and whatnot. And I remember I was in the evening fire, and there was a national Bolshevik guy and the liberal guy, and this liberal guy was explaining how America is the paradise. So this kind of thing that everything that Russia is to it, in Russia, there are people like in Germany, there is people who think that Germany is the biggest problem. In Russia, there are people who think that Russia is the only problem. And in America, there is people that America is the only problem. And this kind of special kind of, and I think it's also kind of imperialist mindset is just the opposite side of the coin, because obviously there are lots of shit happening all around in the world, and it doesn't have to be the same thing.
Yeah,
like China can be doing shit and France can be doing shit, and it doesn't necessarily has to be anything to do with the CIA.
Yeah. I mean, I had this a very similar conversation just a few days ago, actually, and it's something that was my first impression too. You know, looking at it, was that not thinking about Germany or Russia, but the United States. It to me, it sounded like this sounds like someone that, you know, was socialized and grew up and educated in an imperialist society, and they view the world in an imperialist way. And while they're critiquing their government, the way that they're critiquing it is still through the prism of imperialism. And so it's still viewing the world in that way, even though they think that they're criticizing, you know, maybe say the Western United States, right?
Yeah. But also, this is maybe the most primitive point of view. But of course, there are a bit more clever positions. For example, there is position that the war is basically about the NATO expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's all about very bad diplomacy by Ukraine and the United States. And this is why we should make the peace. But this, of course, the problem is that we don't know what is in the Putin's head. Maybe there will be some papers released 50 years from now, maybe not, maybe nothing, maybe we will never know what was the ultimate reason. The NATO, personally, like my opinion is that the main reason is that Putin never managed to gain recognition of the Crimean occupation. In my opinion, that's the main thing. And it's something that he is not willing ever to give up. But of course, it's possible that the NATO expansion also plays some role. role. Yeah. It's there can be many factors there, but the thing is that we cannot kind of revert the thing. Might be that Ukrainian did mistakes, might be that NATO did mistakes in the diplomacy, but we cannot just go back to situation 3 years ago and to kind of cancel this. We cannot say, okay, hey, Ukraine actually has many times proposed that they can give guarantees that they will not join NATO. But Russia and Putin, they are not fine with this. When the war started, they want more. So whatever, whoever was guilty doesn't really play so much role, because Ukrainian and especially Ukrainian and the authoritarians and activists, they are fighting for their survival. So even if the Zelensky did any diplomatic errors, it doesn't mean that it's possible to cancel them now and say, okay, let's have a new round of discussion.
Yeah.
Then there is, there is, of course, a discussion that the war is still a bloodshed and there should be at least be a truce, de-escalation and so on. But here is the problem that most of the people in these areas recently occupied, they definitely don't want this rule to go on. And it's just a huge network of torture prisons and so on, and completely kind of extermination of any kind of national identity and politics and so on. And this is basically something I don't understand that should be accepted, and also that the truce doesn't mean that the war wouldn't resume. Like if there is not a kind of solution, Russia will and Putin will attack more. Because of course, if there is a peace in the current borders, it will be a Putin's victory. And he already won two wars in the past, the Chechnya war and the Georgian war. And it's basically his modus operandi that he is declaring a war, winning it, increases popularity, and 10 years later, he starts another war. It's basically quite important. And the last, of course, it's this discussion, so-called anti-militarist position, that it's fine, violence is fine, but it should not be in the state framework. But like I explained, that what are the anarchists and the authoritarians involved in Russia, it's pretty much of this is not a state framework, because it's basically army that is supplied by the grassroots initiatives. And it also gives some negotiating leverage and influence to these grassroots when the war is over, because everyone knows that the state didn't do so much. It's one thing. And another thing, that it would be pretty stupid to try to find an imperialistic army with some slingshots and Molotov cocktails and sticks and stones. It maybe would be a very noble thing to do, but basically, if you go to war, you really would like to prefer to stay alive and maybe even win. And for this, you need stuff like artillery and tanks. And you cannot make tanks in anarchist squads, unfortunately. Of course, I can appreciate people who have this position, but basically the thing is that we have comrades there, and many comrades already died, and much more will die. Might be that when the war is finished, it's not so many comrades left, but I mean, these people are our friends. I know them, many of them I know personally, since the times when, from the different times, we were part of the same movements. And I think basically anarchist movement also needs this kind of solidarity. There are not easy choices. Maybe also situations and choices and alliances, they are not always ideal. And I don't necessarily have to defend everything that my comrade is doing, but obviously other choice is also very problematic. World is a complicated place. Personally, I choose solidarity. I know these people, I trust them. I trust Dima, who died in April, but he's not the only comrade who is around there. There are many of them still alive. Yeah.
Yeah, there are those. I think being in the US, more physically, but also maybe in general, kind of separate, from other parts of the world, and that the realities, that you speak of, such as if you want to fight in the moment, you're not going to just find a group of people and go to the front lines yourself. That's not realistic, you know? And talking about imperialism, you can talk about what the United States did 20 years ago, or, you know, Iraq, or what have you. But today, you know, like your friends and comrades are, what's happening now is that they're fighting for their survival, and the invading force is Russia, right? And sometimes, you know, before we were kind of talking about different positions and some of these abstract ideas, there are just very simple answers, right? You know, sometimes the answer is, if you want to fight, you might have to join, you know, the international group and join a formal military, you know? If you want to talk about imperialism and you're talking about Ukraine, there's an invading army, you know, and it's Russia. And there are people who are fighting for their survival. I don't know. It feels like sometimes when you're at a distance, it's easy to make things, the world is complicated. Sometimes I feel like we can make them overcomplicated and talk ourselves into a corner, you know, instead of just seeing what's right in front of us. I don't know.
Yeah, no, obviously. I mean, I think there are also arguments like, there are also anarchists in Ukraine who prefer not to go to front line, but try to involve in some social struggles.
Sure.
And of course you can say that, okay, there is hundreds and thousands of people now going in the front line in Ukraine. It doesn't make much difference if 50 or 100 anarchists decided to go there, because most likely they just get themselves dead. And then after war, there is not much anarchist left in Ukraine. But and I think it's kind of argument that kind of makes sense. But for those people who decide to go to the front anyway, because it's still in Ukraine, it's more or less a voluntary thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably in many cases avoid it if you don't want to. I kind of respect this thing. Like, I think anarchists should take responsibility of stuff which is happening. Like, if there is imperialistic country who is not necessarily just trying to exterminate all the Ukrainians, but at least to destroy their identity, their language and culture, and also anything that is like truly leftist or anti-fascist in Ukraine or anti-authoritarian, if those people are going to fight it with weapons, I kind of respect this choice. It doesn't necessarily give anything for the anarchist movement. Of course, many anarchists, and also like Dima, who was Russian volunteering there, he had hopes that anarchists joining there, they can maybe influence the army mood, maybe they can get some necessary skills.
Yep.
Maybe they can in generally move army to more anti-authoritarian direction, or create a general anti-authoritarian networks, and to have a chance to create a strong anarchist movement in Ukraine after war. I think this might be a bit overtly positive. Like, but I don't know if this will happen. Like, it might be just that anarchists get huge, lots of damage without much to build on after the war. But I'm not, like, Dima was always very optimistic in all the kind of most shittiest situations, and it's a good quality for a person, but I'm not this kind of person. I think the situation is bad. Probably it's getting worse. It's extremely bad already in Russia. But I think there is some, like, integrity and responsibility. Like, if you are anti-authoritarian or anti-fascist or anarchist, you still have to do stuff even in the most worst situations. You cannot just escape it. You cannot say that, okay, now I stop being anarchist for the next 5 or 10 or 20 years until the times are better.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that imperative is can drive action, I suppose. And yeah. And I think sometimes, again, things are complicated, but when action, you know, is necessary, then those complications are kind of sidelined for what needs to be done, I suppose. Yeah. So we talked a lot about, you know, like anarchists and folks on the front lines, and that's, you know, a segment of what's happening. But as you stated, there are many different people involved doing different things and support, and one of those involves assisting prisoners, right? And I think that you have some background with this.
Yeah. I was involved, of course. It's been different in different times. It used to be quite a number of anti-fascist prisoners when there were more confrontations with the Nazis. Now there is, I think, overall more than 500. 100 people have been sentenced to prison for various anti-war things. And what basically anarchists have been, and of course you cannot, small groups cannot support all of them. So anarchists mostly are focusing on anarchist anti-war prisoners, but the Solidarity Zone initiative, which I mentioned more early, they are trying to support as many direct action prisoners as possible, but they cannot take all of them. I think now they have already like 16 maybe, or even more prisoners, which and basically one person, one activist probably cannot do many more than one or a couple of the prisoners, because especially in this during the investigation and the first court and appeal, it's can be, if you have a job, it's prison basically that this much you can do
right,
to support one of the prisoners. They have a good Telegram channel which also have English things. You can just type Solidarity Zone in Telegram. They have a hashtag all of the English stuff. So, and they will probably soon have a website as well. They are very like genuine, very active anti-authoritarian group. They also have a Patreon account if you want to support not the prisoners but the activists, because of course occasionally they have to do full-time stuff. It can be pretty heavy. Anarchist Black Cross of Moscow, it's a bit more concentrating on anarchists. Many of the anarchist repression cases, they are not directly involved with the war. But I could actually notice Azad Miftahov, it's a pretty serious, because he just finished, I think, like a 5-year sentence, but he was immediately railroaded back to prison by some trumped-up charges. This is obviously a new, very Stalinistic practice, that they are not letting people out of the prison. Now they are claiming that last May he was discussing with his cellmates some anti-war ideas, which is obviously bullshit. Like he knows that this is not something you can do in prison, but it's also very easy to trump up, because you always can find someone in prison to testify to get out of the prison maybe 1 year before. So this kind of charges are easy to trump up and the situation is bad, but now it's good, important to give at least moral support, and also he needs all the new lawyers and whatever things. He's a mathematician and he's been supported pretty well by the mathematic community during his previous sentence, but it's still a pretty bad situation. There are a couple of explicit anarchists who are been involved in the direct actions or other things. There are two very young anarchists, Alexander Snezhko and Lyuba Lizunova. They are from Chita. It's in the border with Manchuria. We're quite far in the Far East. They were in the punk scene and the hardcore scene, and also involved with some anti-war graffiti. They also accused of being maintaining an anti-war Telegram channel. And their situation is also, of course, difficult, because they are in the far, it's far east, it's might be easy to kind of, it's easy to track whoever is opposite, it's easy to repress them. When they were arrested, they were only 16 and 19 years old. Then they are supported by the anarchist Black Rose of Irkutsk from the Siberia. Then there is case of Alexei Roshkov. He is kind of lone anarchist in Yekaterinburg. He was one of the first people who decided to attack military, this kind of collapse center in the States. You could maybe call it recruitment, but in Russia it's not really recruitment, because you just have to go there when they ask. So it's a call-up station. He burned it down, or at least threw Molotov cocktails. I don't know how much exactly there was a damage. And he escaped. He was arrested some days afterwards, but he was released to home arrest 1 year ago, and he escaped to Kyrgyzstan, but he was kidnapped back to Russia. So he's there in the Reman prison now. There is Roman Shvedov, he's in Krasnodar area, close to the Black Sea. He's also considered himself as anarchist, but not connected with the movement, like Roshkov. He's pretty depressed. He refused lawyer support because he's sure it doesn't change anything. And it's partially true, like probably the lawyer doesn't give you a shorter sentence, but at least it's a way to communicate with the prisoners during the remanding prisoner. And there is also Savely Frolov, who is accused of attempting to leave Russia in order to join the International Legion in Russia. He basically is related to subculture and kind of, how to say, anarchist guy, but also not connection to the movement. He is now being held close to the Georgian prison, close to Georgian border in a prison. So this is basically five people who are somehow anarchist, but who are repressed. But only Snezhkova and Lizunova from Chita, they are kind of connected to movement. Otherwise, they are just with ideas. And then there is Denis Kozak, who is detained in Kazakhstan, in danger of being also extradited to Russia. He is also accused of maintaining Telegram channels with anti-war position. But so this is pretty much as explicitly anarchist anti-war prisoners go. But overall, I think there is more than 50 direct action prisoners who are all in the difficult situation because, of course, if you get the terrorist charge, it's at least 10 years, but probably more. There is, for example, two guys also in Siberian area who were involved in the kind of rock band, and they were given 19 years sentences for arson attack. So, but the good news is that almost all of these people, they are kind of, who are arrested of direct action, they are kind of lone wolves. Like people, for example, who are no one involved in the fighting organization of anarchist communists has been arrested this far. Probably there are people who have been forced to escape Russia, but it's still possible to maintain this kind of resistance if you are maintaining a good security culture, because authorities have been very much trying to find out who is the anarcho-communist fighting organization. There have been lots of people's home raided, lots of interrogation, but this far no one during 1.5 years of war, and maybe many more years of bark activity. I think they have been active maybe 3 or 4 years. No one has ever been charged. So resistance is still possible in Russia. And also prison support is still possible in Russia. Of course, we don't know how many times, but also after the October Revolution, the prisoner support was one of the last things that was being repressed. It was one of the last things that Stalin was closing down. So we hope that it will be the same this time as well, and hopefully the Putin's regime will collapse before that.
Are those I'll do my best. We can chat after about getting links to those Telegram channels. I can put them in the description of this so people can find all these groups.
Yeah.
But are those arrests? I'm curious. Are the arrests about creating like an anti-war channel on Telegram, for instance? Are those related to updated law or updated rules to the Foreign Agent Act, or are they different and just associated to the 2022 special operation, as they would call it?
Foreign agent is. Law is a bit different because it's, I think, in the foreign agent violations, you mostly only get fines, but it can be very heavy fines. And it's more like basically making your political activities impossible.
Yeah.
There is other category of this kind of hostile agent, which might land you in jail also, which is like completely banned of the activities. But the foreign agent thing is basically just making a legal activities impossible. As far as I know, I think it's not really the point of this legislation is not to throw you in jail. What are people facing now is, of course, this is kind of charging that was always expecting. This is, for example, destruction of property. It's often sometimes called, there is this specific concepts in the Russian legal system called hooliganism or vandalism. especially hooliganism is kind of overall a crime that Bolsheviks figured out to charge people who they couldn't charge with other stuff. So it's kind of mindless destruction. Whatever can be hooliganism, it can be cursing a police officer, it can be arson, whatever. It's just a bit strange legal construction. But of course, around during last 10, 15 years, there was all this anti-terrorist legislations, which make things very different because, for example, there were anarchists putting a bomb to FSB office in the 90s in the Moscow, and some leftists, and the big, most of them got sentenced like from 6 to 9 years. Now they would get at least 16 or 19 years, or maybe 25. So it has been, now it's different. But yeah, then there is this kind of so-called fake news law that's spreading fake information about the army. And this is what people are being charged a lot. And this can be one post in the social media and you are going in for 5 years. But it's also very random. Like there is also cases, for example, that people have thrown Molotov cocktails to military centers, get the probational sentence or fine. Like some people got 19 years, some get fined. This is very much, it's pretty random. It very much depends on the region of the judge, like maybe family relations, whatever. The system is not, the Russian legal system never been very consistent, and now it's very inconsistent. Yeah. It's the only general thing that whatever, you can get to big shit for whatever, but sometimes even if you do quite big things, you only get to small shit. But still, of course, people are getting very afraid.
Of course. Yeah. You know, I ask because I think folks, at least in the U.S., would be surprised to hear that type of prison sentence for, a 16 and 19 year old for creating or supposed allegedly creating like an anti-war Telegram channel, for instance. You know, that's something that
this probably wouldn't, like, it has to be anti-terrorist charge to get this long sentence. But for Telegram channel, yeah, you can get 7 years. I think Ivanov, who created this anti-war, I maybe have to this might be wrong, but I think he got something like that, like 6 or 7 years for creating a protest Telegram channel and maintaining it.
And yeah, there's tons of articles too. I'll put the link in the description, but if you go to Autonomous Action's website, I mean, there's just tons of articles. I'm looking at it right now. Beyond articles, there's a lot of great resources, but there's a lot of articles about people who are facing, in jail or facing prison sentences and their backstories, whether they're in detention centers or actually, serving their time.
And of course, in terms of propaganda, this is a bit bad propaganda for anarchist activity, that most of the half of the stuff you write, of course, in the Russian section, it's maybe not so depressing. It's just pretty much in the English section because basically it's quite, it's a big resources to support these people, and we need the international community to get involved in this. But even in the Russian section, sometimes it can be 1 week that it's mostly news about prisoners, and this is obviously doesn't make being anarchist very much inspiring.
Disheartening.
But what can you do? Like, that's the reality now. These people are either they are our comrades, or maybe they are not anarchists, but no one else is supporting them except anarchists. Because the truth is that many liberals or human rights people, they are still kind of hesitant. Of course, this is changing. Like Memorial, who got the Nobel Prize, they are discussing that maybe we should support all the anti-war people, even if they are claimed to be terrorists. And also Navalny's supporters, they have the same kind of discussion. But still, the fact is that the Solidarity Zone, more Solidarity Zone and to lesser extent, anarchist Black Cross groups, they are the only groups who are giving real support to these people.
Yeah, we had talked before you were feeling a little ill. We've been talking for a while, so I think maybe might be a good time to wrap up. And in doing so, I think that I would ask of you, you know, what, I don't know, what, whether it's with autonomous action, things that you're doing, projects you're working on, or just general ways of viewing the world, viewing the invasion of Ukraine, what should folks in the U.S. know about, whether it's things you're doing or just in general?
Yeah, I mean, on general situation, I think basically the main point is that not all the shit in this planet is by the CIA. Like, there are lots of stuff happening. There is imperialism, there is colonialism, there are massacres and war crimes that have nothing to do with the United States. And should be aware of this, should be supporting people who are fighting against this, even if the people who are fighting are sometimes facing difficult choices. Like, you should check, you should think, like, who is your comrade, who is sharing your ideas, check what they are doing, and try to make them some solidarity. Like, I don't think solidarity in the end is a very complicated concept. You also, of course, it's difficult sometimes to kind of find the information that you can trust. But basically, yes. What I think, like, if something is happening somewhere in the world, especially like when I was pretty young and didn't know so much about the stuff, I was usually trying to check what the local anarchists are saying. Like, if there was something happening in Albania or Egypt or Sudan or Iran, I was checking, okay, there are some anarchists probably, because the thing is that anarchists are not so many, but anarchists are almost everywhere. So probably you can always find an anarchist position, and probably it's something you can relate to. And in this case of this war, it's pretty easy. Also in the Belarus, you can find, if you never heard about Belarus, if you don't know where it's located, you can still pretty easily find anarchists from Belarus who can explain this stuff for you.
Right.
And of course, not all the anarchists have the same position about stuff. Often anarchists are basically disagreeing about everything, but there is no anarchist who is supporting Putin, or there is no anarchist who believes that the war is only because of the NATO.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Thanks for taking time to talk to me and to educate me as well as folks listening. I agree. And, you know, it's something I've said in past videos, whether it's anarchists or what have you, at least listen to people in the region, right? That's the place to go to first.
Yeah,
and I'll do my best to put some links to facilitate.
Okay, that. I will send. I will send the text of the leaflet that we distributed in Sanimier in the Switzerland. It has lots of links. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thanks. See you later. Yeah.